Canucks Central Thursday. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And of course, you can be a part of the program if you are listening live. You leave a comment, a question, or comment.
Come on.
What? We're continuing this, are we not?
Are we doing the Quammen thing?
No, yes,
we're
not doing the Quammen. It is now a thing on the show.
Quammentary? No,
yes,
that's not a thing.
You can leave a comment, question, or a comment. I'm being more efficient, Sat. That's
I'm more disappointed in in all the people that are indulging you in the commentary, or all the people losing their minds after the Canucks lost the first three games of the season. I don't know which one I'm more annoyed by.
Well, you know. This is the reality we live in now. If you are listening live, leave a comment at 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks off today. They made a couple of roster moves, which we'll get to in the Canucks Central Roundup, as they have returned home and are getting ready for a three-game homestand beginning with Pittsburgh on Saturday. But a lot of the questions and comments, the comments that we get into the show are about who the Canucks could target on the trade market to add to their decor. So we will oblige. It is the open.
Welcome to the open.
Oh, that's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me.
Yes, the open, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And, well, as far as the latest goes around the National Hockey League, and I think this ties into our conversation today about which defenseman could potentially be available on the trade market. Shea Theodore signed a 7-year mega extension with the Vegas Golden Knights, just a shade under $7.5 million per. It feels like another favorable team-friendly contract for the Vegas Golden Knights. But aside from, you know, continuing to have that conversation about the no-tax state teams getting great deals on some of their extensions with players, I think the bigger conversation, and one we've had a ton here, Sat, is defensemen that are really good in their 20s, and I know Theodore is now into his late 20s, but defensemen in their 20s that are really good just don't, generally do not enter the trade market. It just doesn't really happen, and we see it again here with Shea Theodore, a year away from free agency, and Vegas doesn't really let him even sniff the idea of getting to the open market.
Yeah, and we can dig into that a little bit more, too, and even related to the deal the Canucks made to acquire Filip Hronek and give him the money and the assets. And I think as far as where things are at right now, we were, you know, talking about this the other day, but there aren't that many obvious trade targets available in free agency. This year at the deadline, there are a few guys that have 1 year left of their contracts, but they're kind of have varying degrees or levels of ability, and I'm not sure how excited fans would be for those players anyways. And anybody else you're talking about or considering could be available in the trade market all have term left in their contracts. So, like, as far as you trying to acquire even a Filip Hronek type, I'm not even sure that guy's available that has a year left and then has control and could, you know, put up 40, 50 points. Like, it's a very, very sparse market.
It really is. And even the rental market, because so many players are locking into long-term deals, the rental market is not as robust as maybe it has been in years past. So when you start to look through the potential options, you notice that, you know, there's not a ton that are all that obvious. And this is, like, from the Canucks' perspective, they come into this year, they chose they were going to spend the majority of their cap dollars in the summer adding to the forward group. So they add four forwards, a couple of defensemen, but more on the cheaper side. And, hey, we'll address the defense as we get closer to the deadline and have a better idea of the type of contender that we are, who's available, and what our potential options might be. So as it stands right now, I mean, left shot defenseman, right shot defenseman, where do you think the bigger need is for the Canucks, or where do we imagine the Canucks are more likely to side with, you know, a potential acquisition?
I think what the Canucks might do is really going to be dependent on what the market is going to bear. Even if they want a right-handed defenseman, if the best one they can find that upgrades their top four is a lefty, then they would have to pursue it, much like they did with Zadorov last year. So I don't think we can close the door. But my opinion, I think the right side is the bigger need. In a perfect world, I'd rather add a top four righty defenseman that allows Myers to play down the lineup and perhaps be a bit more of utility and not rely so much on a guy like, you know, Juulsen or even Desharnais, who's still trying to find his way. I think most of us would agree that the right side is probably the one you would add, you want to add. The question just is it even feasible to begin with?
Yeah, and, you know, with the market being what it is, like you say, I'm not sure you have the ability to decide where you're going to add. And maybe it's not going to be a perfect fit. I mean, last year you might have even said, would it be better? Because they had Soucy, they had Cole. Would it be better to add a right shot defenseman? Well, they went and they got Nikita Zadorov. Left shot defenseman, at times they had to play Cole on his right side. They had to figure out how to make it work because that was the defenseman that was available. They were able to get him. And it was what they did. So I think similarly, that's how you go about it this year. You know, when you look around and you see, like, there are obvious names, right? Even early season trade boards, you'll see Ivan Provorov with Columbus, who is a pending unrestricted free agent. He would be a rental. Obviously, it's been a weird go for him. He was really good in his younger days in Philly, and somewhere along the way, it went off the rails a little bit for him, but still has a ton of talent, plays in every situation, and maybe on a better team, because Philly wasn't very good, and we know Columbus is not very good right now. Maybe on a better team, you see a better version of Ivan Provorov. Cam Fowler has long been on the list and has been talked about since preseason. Yeah. He's got 2 years left at $6.5 million per, but like those are kind of the obvious names right now, and outside of that there isn't a ton.
No, right? I mean, you know, you throw Jacob Chychrun in there because he has a year left on his deal, but if the Capitals do well, they acquire
five and one right now.
Exactly. And if they keep doing well, what are the chances they extend Jacob Chychrun? I think those are good odds. So even, you know, a player that you're intrigued by, and Marcus Pedersen's a guy with the Penguins who we'll see here on Saturday. He's a lefty defenseman. This front office is familiar with him, but he's a lefty. He's not, you know, is he a number four type? He can PK, moves the puck okay, but, you know, how much is he truly upgrading what you currently have on the left side? That's somewhat debatable. Maybe some upgrades on puck movement, but do you fully upgrade defensively? But somebody who's definitely, you know, a guy you keep an eye on. But none of these guys you look at and say, if the Canucks acquire Marcus Pedersen, that they're going to go on and be cup favorites. It's like, okay, a nice piece. Like, but is it really that big time needle moving piece? That I'm not quite sure. But at the same time, I'm not sure that guy is available right now. So if we start looking at the list and we get to some lefties, you know, as a fallback option coming up in a little bit, but are the most intriguing names on the right side guys who have yet to come available? Because I know people are texting in about Rasmus Anderson. He's the obvious one, right? But again, the Flames are off to a good start. He has a year left on his contract. Is that something they want to do now, or do they wait till the offseason or next year, and depending on how close they feel like they are as a team? But if you move away from Rasmus Anderson as being like the big name people are always looking at, I don't think there's a single player that's currently available that we can look at. It's more about projecting a player that could be available, looking at their situation, looking at their contractual obligations, and where the team is headed in the next few years.
Yeah, and Anderson, again, similar to Washington, like Calgary's 5-0 and run right now.
Yeah.
If that ownership group, the way that they've handled things in the past, if they are within sniffing distance of a playoff spot come trade deadline time, I don't think they're going to be entertaining a Rasmus Anderson trade. And they might put that off until, you know, a year later, or until the offseason, as you mentioned. I think, you know, for a lot of our listeners, from what we've talked about, that's kind of the ideal trade candidate if it were to become available in a Rasmus Anderson. Beyond that, you know, you are looking at maybe guys with warts or, you know, taking on a lot of term. A player we've mentioned quite a bit is Damon Severson. Mackenzie Weegar in Calgary as well at 7 years. His name, after, you know, things went haywire for the Flames after the Matthew Tkachuk trade, it started to pop up in trade discussions despite recently signing that long-term deal with Calgary. As far as like top-tier options, like putting aside potential availability, what are the top-tier options for the Canucks should those guys become available?
So I think right now when I went through every single team, I went through every single team in the league numerous times, and I know you looked at the same thing again too. And the guy I keep looking at and I'm intrigued by, and I don't think there's any reason they would trade him today, but I keep wondering, where is Ottawa headed and what is Ottawa going to do long term? They have a new ownership group coming in, they have some prospects coming in, they're going to have to figure out some things when it comes to their forwards, and they're going to have to make some sort of, you know, hard decision somewhere. And Artem Zub is no longer a player who's in his, you know, early 20s. He's getting up to the age 29. He has 3 years left on his contract. Like, and I really love the improvements in his game. And I wonder if the Ottawa Senators don't have the success they're hoping to have this year, that a player that we didn't expect, like Artem Zub, could be available. So that's the guy I'm like most intrigued by. It's a bit off the board because the other guys, and we can name them here in a second, Reach, but we're talking about players that are, that have big salaries with long-term commitments to them. So when we have people asking us who are players you could go after, it's not the most enticing list. And how willing are you to take on a Colton Pareko who has 6 years left at $6.5 million at the age of 30?
Yeah, not, I don't know. For a guy who's got a little bit of an injury history too and has had very mixed results, although he had a bit of a bounce back year last year, I don't know. That's might be a risk that's too rich for my blood. On Colton Pareko. And that's sort of where I find myself in a lot of these discussions is like, do you want to lock into somebody super long term when you've got Willander coming? Not that that should be the deciding factor in whether or not you go after a player, but, you know, It has to at least be somewhat a part of the conversation, because then if you are going to target a player that's got a lot of term or a player on the right side that you could consider signing to an extension and a longer term deal, well, then Tom Willander probably becomes a part of that trade because his value to the organization isn't quite what it might be as it is right now, considering, you know, there is a pathway to him growing into a spot on the roster. There is no blockage. You have Hronek. Yeah, you've got Myers, but beyond that, you have the opportunity to have Willander grow into a role with the Canucks over the next couple of years. But you know, if you're signing a Zub or let's say it is a Rasmus Anderson, all of a sudden Tom Willander it changes, I think, his status in the organization a little bit. But that's where I really wonder about term players, because, yeah, maybe the acquisition cost isn't quite as high because, you know, you're taking on a lot of real dollars over a lot of years to take on that contract. And if a team is already selling on a guy that they recently or somewhat recently signed to a long-term deal, it probably means things haven't gone as well. That's the only thing that's really all that appetizing to me about potentially acquiring a player on a longer-term deal, is that it might not cost as much when you think about trade acquisition cost.
Yeah, the cost is going to be tied into the contract, for instance, right? Like, Damon Severson hasn't had the impact he had hoped to have with the Columbus Blue Jackets, and he was a player that Canucks had some level of interest in, you know, a couple of years ago when the the Devils traded his rights to the Columbus Blue Jackets in free agency, and he signed an 8-year contract, even had a healthy scratch in his first year. We know that team's in transition now, all of a sudden, having to do things, but how willing are you to take on a contract that has 7 years left of 6.25 when you already committed $7.25 million to Philip Hronek and have another big contract coming for Quinn Hughes? Like, how comfortable are you taking that contract on, even if you think he's a player that can help you?
Yeah, not totally in love with it, you know. And yeah, I know, and that there's some prior interest there from the Canucks front office and Damon Severson, but I don't know. I'm not in love with that kind of a thing. I'd rather target a rental, if I'm honest.
Yeah, and honestly, but the rental, here's the problem with the rentals. So the three rentals or guys who are on expiring contracts that are righty defensemen, Ethan Bear, who's in the minors right now, David Savard, who, I mean, 34 years old. What do you think of David Savard as a player today? And Will Borgen, who's on the Seattle Kraken, that are playing well, and he's a UFA at the end of the season, so I'm not sure they're looking to trade him. So if you're looking for rental right-hand defensemen, like, there aren't a ton. Yeah. You know who becomes really interesting all of a sudden again, and is a guy that you wondered about before the season began? It's Timothy Liljegren. Has a year left, $3 million. If we talk about a player that hasn't really taken that step yet, and he's not tiny, he's six one, he's like 200 pounds, but needs to, you know, obviously round out his game. Is that the smarter bet for a team looking to add a top four defenseman instead of paying the piper for a player who's not available or taking on a contract like Damon Severson's or even Ryan Pulock's, who's making 6.15 over six and he's 30 years old with the New York Islanders? And hey, I'm not even sure they would trade him, but if they did, again, how willing are you to take that stuff on? So if you look at a guy like Liljegren, you know, bringing it back to the guy who's already on the market, is he the safest, cheapest bet for a team looking to improve their blue line?
I've talked myself into Timothy Liljegren as a potential trade target. As I've said in the past, like, it comes with some uncertainties, but the entire right shot market essentially comes with some uncertainties, right? If you're buying in on Timothy Liljegren as a potential trade target, you know, I think part of it is the Canucks being confident in their ability to develop players and their ability to get players to fit into their system and get them playing the way that they feel is a way that they can win in the playoffs. And Liljegren, like, yeah, he doesn't have the size of a Desharnais or a Myers, but he's not tiny. He's not, you know, he's not Eric Brandstrom size. He is still over 6 feet, still over 200 pounds. Like, there is some of those elements there for him, but he's got to, like, you've got to find a way to get him to play a harder game. Does he have that in him when it comes to playoff time? I mean, I'm not sure. Like, he is 25. Maybe there is, like, a, hey, at some point you are just who you are, and that's the guy we have to work with. And that would be sort of the worry about acquiring a player like a Timothy Liljegren.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? I mean, I think the risk is somewhat mitigated because there's only 1 year left on his contract and it fits in cap-wise for next year. But the cost of acquisition is going to be low. Now, obviously, he's not going to be a player that's going to necessarily be the solution right away. It's a bit of a project. But again, going through this entire list, because people ask us all the time, who are players the Canucks can go after defensively? It's like, this is kind of the poison you got to pick through.
And I would say, like, right now the Leafs are in a point where they hope to get something for Liljegren. I don't know how tangible that something is, but maybe a trade would have already happened if they were willing to lower their acquisition cost. And as time goes on, you know, they're going to get Hakanpaa back off LTIR, and so maybe that really spurs on some level of urgency to get Liljegren off the books. But as of right now, it just doesn't, it feels like the Leafs are okay to wait and allow time to pass before they have to pull the trigger on something like that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, before we move on to the roundup here in a second, the only other players I'd throw out there as far as righty defensemen that have a little bit of term left would be Connor Murphy, who has one more year beyond this at 4.4 with the Chicago Blackhawks. Nick Jensen, who obviously was acquired with the Ottawa Senators, has one more year left at 4.05. But considering he's in his mid-30s, his game's okay, I'm not sure how great you feel about that. Like, Connor Murphy might end up being the guy, the righty defenseman, that teams are after behind Rasmus Anderson if Chicago makes him available.
Yeah. The one player I would say that is at the top of my list of potentials continues to be Vladislav Gavrikov. Again, I mean, he's a really good defenseman. Right now, he's filling in for Drew Doughty, who's been hurt, and he's filled in alongside Mikey Anderson and played really well. So for a guy who is a pending unrestricted free agent, does have a no-move clause, so he'll get to decide if, you know, LA falls out of the playoff race and they decide that they are going to be sellers for this year come deadline time. That's something that is still very, very, very much too early to determine, but it's a player that I'd keep an eye on just to see where LA finds themselves come January and February, and that guy would be near the top of my list of potential ads should he become available.
Yeah, if he becomes available. Some write-in text that this one here says the Canucks should go after Mario Ferraro 1,000%. He is on the list of lefty defensemen that we compiled, but I would imagine with a year left on his contract, it's not going to be a cheap acquisition considering he's only making 3.25 on the cap.
His we're going to have Dom Lucision on a little bit later, and his latest 16 stats talks about Elias Pettersson, but in there, there's a little bit about Jake Walman, who's new to the San Jose Sharks, and he's having really good early results with San Jose, at least by the numbers, versus Mario Ferraro, who's a guy who's well thought of around the league, has a very high reputation around the league, but from a numbers standpoint, his results haven't quite been as strong as, say, somebody like Jake Walman. So something interesting to watch there as far as Ferraro goes in that conversation. All right, that's going to do it for the discussion around some potentially available defensemen. I hope you got out of this what we've been trying to tell you for a while, and that is the list of potentially available defensemen is not all that deep, and currently it's not all that strong either.
Yeah, I mean, these are players we looked at, you know, with somewhat untenable situations or something weird with their organizations. I think what teams are hoping for is somebody that we didn't consider, that nobody expected, comes available the next few months.
And as some of our texters mentioned, Bowen Byram says hello. A situation that was the shock trade of last year. We did not expect Bowen Byram to get moved. It happened, a one for one, like a mid 20 center for a high end young defenseman in Bowen Byram. But you know, those trades very rarely happen, and they only happen if you have a specific piece that that team is looking for in order to get a deal like that done.
With the center, with the Sabres, at some point, do they move a Byram? Do they move an Owen Power? Do they move a Samuelson? Like, those are the guys to watch on the Buffalo Sabres.
And right now, Owen Power looks like their best defenseman.
So, yeah.
More so even than Rasmus Dahlin. All right, let's get to the Canucks Central Roundup here on Canucks Central, and a couple of things ongoing. I know lots of Canucks fans took this news very well today. Eric Brandstrom and Arshdeep Bains sent to Abbotsford. I know you tweeted about this and mentioned that this is potentially cap savings for the Vancouver Canucks.
Now, nobody has confirmed or denied when Derek Forbort is going to come back. So I know it was mentioned on social media that maybe he is due to come back. I haven't heard that confirmation yet. We'll see where things are at with him as he took a bit of a leave to deal with personal matters, you know, about a week or so ago. So we'll see where he's at. But if he isn't coming back, then you can guarantee that Brandstrom is returning on Saturday, and maybe even Arshdeep Bains. And if Forbort comes back, still one of them could return. The main reason for this, I think, sending both guys down, they can have both players off their cap for 2 days. And in terms of accruing cap space towards the trade deadline, it can save them upwards of $10,000 as far as going towards future cap space on 2 days, which is not insignificant. You got to add these. And when we talk about accruing cap space, this is what it looks like. How many days can you be under the cap as significantly as possible to add salary by the trade deadline? And to me, this screams like a move like that. Paper guys down for a couple of days, and it doesn't hurt Brandstrom. He doesn't need to go through waivers again because he's already gone through it. And he can play 10 games or be on the roster for 30 days, so I'm not too worried about him on this spot. Bains obviously doesn't have to go through waivers. So to me, this looks at the moment, unless there's another shoe to drop, to be a paper transaction to save cap space for a couple of days.
Yeah, and I know it's still up in the air if Derek Forbort will be returning from his personal leave with the team, but because of Brandstrom's waiver situation, should Forbort be available and ready to come back, as far as like, you know, your roster and managing assets, it probably makes the most sense to have Brandstrom go back to Abbotsford, considering he is still not requiring waivers to go down. A December return for Thatcher Demko. That is some of the discussion today. Frank Saravalli was on Halford and Brough this morning, and he had this to say about what he's hearing about Thatcher Demko's potential return after seeing him in practice with the Canucks in Chicago earlier this week.
I don't know that there's a ready-made fix for this. And I think that's actually really kind of at the root of it, is it seems like basically what, at least this is how it's been relayed to me, it seems like at the root of this, Thatcher Demko is basically trying to deal with a new reality of what that knee feels like. And I don't know that how much better it's going to get in the short term. As he continues to work away at it, it might ultimately just be getting to a place where he says, okay, I understand what this is like. I understand how this is impacting me, and I'm going to have to find a way to get comfortable moving forward.
There is Frank Saravalli on Thatcher Demko, and I think it falls in line with sort of what we've talked about. Sad is it's still very much waiting and seeing how Demko is continuously responding to the work he's putting in order to try and get back onto the ice.
Yeah, and the reason the team didn't want to put any real firm timelines and had us, you know, assuming that it would be maybe sometime in November, earliest perhaps Halloween. We know that's not going to happen. Could be sometime in November. There's never been a hard timeline set. I think optimistically there was some hope that it would be somewhere along that line. But considering how strange this injury is, how there is no history on it for NHL goaltenders, we're all learning as we go here as far as what this all entails and what it looks like. So if it does take to December, I don't think we should take it as a big surprise. Do we view that as a setback or not? Listen, you can view things however you want. The reality is he's dealing with a situation that we haven't seen NHL goalies deal with, and nobody really knows how it's going to turn out. And considering the uncertainty about it, I would imagine you would expect there would be some, you know, some setbacks, so to speak, until you figure it out. So let's just hope that he is back at some point, you know, before the new year. But I guess we shouldn't be surprised if it does go all the way until December.
It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Still very much a gray area when it comes to Thatcher Demko's return from injury. Coming up, Landon Ferraro is going to join us, our Thursday analyst here on Canucks Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.